your eyes to the skies. It's time for Spaced Out on 95 PFM, thanks to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.
Good afternoon, David.
Good afternoon, Johnny.
How are you?
I'm very good.
That's
is good. Big Hungry there as well?
I'm good also.
I'm glad to hear it.
I was just silent in that very moment, but I'm pretty good. You know, I've got all my limbs and I'm feeling pretty great, mate. I'm standing up.
You're standing up?
That's about it. I think that's a win for the day, don't you think?
I sort of, in my mind, I imagine you sitting down in the studio.
That's probably just the name giving that away. I tell you what, I'm not doing as good as this 14-year-old that's showing Stephen Hawking what's up.
Well, exactly. This arose because they, in the UK, struck a new coin, the 50p piece, and it celebrated Stephen Hawking, and it put one of his famous equations on the coin. The problem is that this prodigy from France called Avril Lapremière, she's 14 years old. She's the youngest person to study physics at Sorbonne University.
Whoa.
At 14, yeah. She says, I set myself the challenge of deriving black hole entropy from first principles in less than 5 minutes. But the answer I got was out by a factor of two. So her result didn't match what Hawking came up with. Okay, so she said she set herself the task of deriving it in 5 minutes, and this is something that Hawking arrived at after a lot of calculations and thinking.
Right.
But anyway, it turns out I don't understand it myself. I will say this right now, but she says it's a typical schoolboy error. This is 14-year-old. She says, I assumed that I'd made the mistake, but quickly realized the fault was Hawking's. I'm surprised Hawking made it. And, of course, well, why hasn't anyone else noticed it? We can't test it at the moment. There's no experiment that we can do to a black hole to figure this out. And it's only because she went right back to the beginning to derive the equation, her own, from basic principles that she discovered the error. So this coin, they've had to withdraw it.
Oh, it's so great that she's French. It's not going to help relations.
Exactly.
is this really recent news? Is this in the last day or two?
It is. But I tell you what, when you mention Brexit, the Royal Mint.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, they actually printed a Brexit 50p coin with the date of 29th of March on it, and they've had to withdraw that.
Has anyone seen these coins?
I think the Hawking one they did. I think that was actually already out.
Real collector's item,
that. The Brexit one, they managed to cancel the striking that coin. Yeah.
I think John's smelling an April Fool's,
I'm unsure. I'm just wondering if this is an April Fool's thing, perhaps, in the science community. But...
possibly.
Don't quote me on that.
I mean, I see what you're saying.
But I haven't seen
anything saying, oh, actually, this was an April Fool. But
okay.
John's pretty skeptical when he goes, okay, like that. That pretty much means we should probably just move on, but you're not going to get any better than that. So.
I'll tell you what, if it's an April Fool, I'll definitely let you know next time.
Okay great.
Now, there's a fossil site evidence for asteroid impact, which was obviously potentially the demise of the dinosaurs.
Well, that's right. People have been arguing ever since the idea of the... crater by Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico been caused by an asteroid that caused the extinction of the dinosaurs and much life around the world at the time 65 million years ago. So what they've found over in North Dakota is a site where this fossils can be dated to the time of the asteroid exactly, because when something like this hits, it doesn't have to be as big as that, but anything that vaporizes on impact with the Earth, it creates molten rock, and that's going to splash up high into space, and it forms what are called tektites. It's like a teardrop shape of little glass spherules.
Man, that sounds mint.
And so they're very, very particular. It's very hard to create them any other way at all. And so what they found was these tektites, these glass spherules, had fallen like rain in this part of North Dakota, and fish that were in the water that opened their mouths like just get their food by opening their mouths and filtering it through their gills, these spherules were stuck in the gills, so they must have drowned from this material that had rained down. So they had died directly from this material that had come back from space from that asteroid. And what they found in the same layer were a whole bunch of other things, insects, other fish, mammals, plants, but they also found dinosaurs, including part of a Triceratops. So they know, therefore, that dinosaurs were definitely alive, at least up until the time of the asteroid impact.
I could be wrong, David, but I think Triceratops might be John's favorite dinosaur. He was pretty stoked when you said Triceratops just now.
Well, everyone's got their favourite, I suppose.
Go on, John.
So definitely one of the more robust and grunty dinosaurs.
I'm more of a fan of like a pack of raptors.
You like them robust.
Mm.
Okay.
Now,
he likes a good heifer dinosaur.
Now, camera has imaged light travelling in a lab at 1 trillion something per
frames
second.
Frames per second.
Frames per second. 10 trillion frames per second.
Okay, so let me just imagine that real quick. I can't. What
you
do we
can't.
Do now?
No, neither can I. I mean, normal movies, what you see at the cinema, that's 24 frames a second.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's fast enough to fool our brains and eyes. We can't see individual frames. We're not capable of doing that. So that's all you need to fool a person.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes when I blink rapidly, I feel like I'm tripping it up.
Yeah, well,
but I understand that it's only my mind.
But a blink actually lasts a third of a second.
Okay, that's
good
to know.
Well, in that time, light would travel a couple of times around the world.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
I never really liked light's vibe, eh?
So light is very fast. Light travels at 300,000 kilometers per second, a bit over a second for light to get to the moon.
Mm.
Well, what they did is...
How's the camera going to see anything if it's faster than light, though?
What's that?
How's the camera going to see anything if it's 10 trillion frames per second? It needs light. What? I'm confused. My tiny brain.
In the first experiment, 100 billion frames per second, was to send light through a bottle that had water with milk in it. And as the light travels from one end of the bottle to the other, it bounces off of the bits of milk in the in the water. Okay, so if you shine a torch into a bottle with some milk in it, water and milk and water, you'll see it sort of glows, okay? But if you slow it right down, you can see the light enter one end of the bottle and go through that and out the other end of the bottle.
Mm-hmm. Cool, cool.
If you slow it down fast enough, and that's what they did. Well, they were also able to rack that up 100 times to 10 trillion frames per second, and they watched light travel across the distance of 1 millimeter.
They're like making eye contact with light at the same time, sort
now,
of thing.
What does what's the point of doing this, or what
John,
are they trying
rad.
To figure out?
Well, firstly, to actually show that light does move and all those sorts of basic mm-hmm. sort of things.
Sounds like a new pasteurization technique as well, or something going on there.
But what they think is they can go to the next level and be able to do weird things like being able to see around corners and see inside things like an X-ray.
Does this somehow relate to a possibility of an invisibility cloak?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Okay, carry on.
No, I'll let you know when I hear about that one, though.
Sweet. I just thought light bending around things, I thought that was the thing.
Yeah. I was thinking about seeing into the future with bending around.
So if you think of that blink, a third of a second, recorded at 10 trillion frames a second, if you played back that at normal rate, at 24 frames a second, it would take something like 20 years to play it back.
No time, I ain't got time for that. Well, that sounds kind of mint for anyone that's super into camera stuff.
Yeah, they think they can get it even faster than that.
Mm.
That's pretty amazing, really. Just
it's epic.
Now, NASA, have they tested some sort of helicopter that can fly in a vacuum?
Not quite. What they want to do is to be able to fly on Mars.
Yes.
Okay, now Mars has virtually no atmosphere, but it does have some. It's about 0.5% of the equivalent on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
It's all carbon dioxide, but it's very, very thin. It's like being at 30 kilometers above the surface of the Earth. That's how thin the air is on the surface of Mars. So what they did was put this helicopter, weighs just under 2 kilograms, inside a vacuum chamber that they use at JPL. But they didn't take all the air out. They left enough air in to simulate Mars's atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. Sweet.
What they also did was put a little hook on top, because Mars has some gravity, so it has about a third of Earth gravity. So they had a little hook on top with a spring, so that made the helicopter as light as it would be on Mars.
Mm. It's quite crude, really, eh? But I can totally see how all this would work.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a technology demo, so it's to see whether this would work at all. And it did.
Mint.
Yeah, so they reckon if they were to take this to Mars and turn it on,
what does it look
like?
Would
hover, it would actually fly.
Does it look like a regular helicopter, or is it kind of like, that looks a bit crummy?
Well, it's small, a couple of kilograms. The rotors are pretty long, though, 1.2 meters long, and there's two. They spin in opposite directions.
Oh, sick, like an old kind of war helicopter situation. Or are they on top of each other? I got you. No, I'm figuring it out.
Yeah, the two rotors are above each other.
Got it.
And they spin in opposite directions, yeah. But they spin very fast, about 10 times faster than a normal helicopter. About 2,400 revolutions a minute.
Wow.
It would go hard in our atmosphere then, eh? If we were to just set it free.
Yeah, it would probably shoot up like a, almost like a rocket, I suppose. So they were trying to get something that would work on Mars, and the technology demonstration was a success. So,
fantastic.
Who knows when they'll get it to Mars to test it.
Now, the Rocket Lab have successfully launched once again.
Well done.
Well, yeah, I thought I should just quickly put that in, because they were having some trouble last week. It was meant to go on Monday. Eventually, it was launched on Friday. They got all the bugs out. It's got a U.S. Department of Defense payload. The first commercial one for the year, and more to come, presumably.
Cool. And now what's going on at the Stardome in the next couple of weeks?
A couple of things. Friday is Yuri's night. So Yuri Gagarin was the first person to go around the world up into space back in 1961. So each year we celebrate his achievement with Yuri's Night at Stardome. So it's $25 for a ticket, but you get a show about space exploration. There are also drinks and snacks.
Is there some cool Russian font?
I beg your pardon?
Will there be some cool Russian font kicking around?
I know in the past we have had the... the Russian consul has attended.
Mean. It's so tweaked.
I'm not sure
Russian,
if he'll be there.
Russian technology is so buzzy. I like it. Good on them. And Alien Pursuit, school holiday program.
Yep, the school holiday is coming up the week after next. So aliens is the theme that we're following there. So start off with activities and experiments, technology, connected with extraterrestrial life, splitting light into a spectrum and being able to tell what's on another planet or another world just by looking at what happens with the light. Then we go outside for rocket launching, weather permitting, and then finally the planetarium show is called We Are Aliens.
Oh,
yeah. So that's the holiday program.
Prometheus.
There will be three holidays in the holiday program with Easter and Anzac Day, but all the other days will be open. The shows are at 10, 12 and 1, suits ages 5 to 12. For the children it's $12, and for adults or seniors $10 if they're, presumably they'll be accompanying their children.
Yeah, why not get along to the school holiday program there at the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium. Now, actually, David, I just got a text here. It's interesting. Just asking, doesn't Rocket Lab have some dodgy links to US military, and the latest launch is in contradiction to some of our laws?
I dispute the word dodgy. As far as I'm aware, they've been upfront about all of that.
Mm-hmm.
They've had a relationship with the military since pretty much their inception. They cut their teeth on fuel for missiles and that sort of thing, the sort of thing you can't launch here.
Right.
The headquarters of Rocket Lab is, in fact, in the United States, although you know, we regard it as a New Zealand company, and there's mostly New Zealanders in it. The actual headquarters is over there. It's the only way to get ahead in the space technology. You have to have some link like that.
Right on, right on. Well, lastly, someone just wants to know if you're at the museum on the weekend, mate.
Maybe someone has recognized your
someone
voice.
Someone just wants to know if David Britton was at the museum on the
weekend.
Yeah,
yeah, you just look for the glass cabinet on the left, and there I am.
Oh, mate. Thanks so much, David. It's always a pleasure to do Spaced Out, and big ups to the Stardome, of course.
Thanks a lot.
We'll catch you in a couple of weeks.
Couple of weeks, definitely.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.
Control, we are docked. That was Spaced Out on 95 BFM, thanks to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.